Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. It is 7 a.m. It's 7 a.m. here in Calgary, Alberta, 9 a.m. in New York, 2 p.m. in London, UK, 3 p.m. in Lusaka, Zambia, 12 a.m. in Melbourne, Australia, wherever you're listening from. This is Zambia Blog Talk Radio, and my name is Roger Charlie. I'll be your host today, October the 17th. And let me just welcome everyone who is decided to join us this morning. It is another exciting day, and we are hoping to have a great day as we continue with Zambia Diaspora e-conference. Let me just welcome some people who are just joining us. Area code 646, good morning.
Good morning, my name is Charles.
Charles, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Toronto.
Toronto, thank you so much, Charles, for joining us this morning. 416, good morning.
Hi, this is Mustafa, calling from Toronto.
Mustafa. Okay. Your numbers have changed today. Good morning and welcome. Someone I think has a very long number. Let me just open up the mic. We're already getting full here, but we should be okay. Someone either calling using a calling card or Skype. Good morning.
Hello, is that me?
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. This is Bright speaking from Australia. How are you?
Oh, yes, my brother. We've kept you alive this time of the day over there. We're okay.
Yes, actually, I'm just using my mobile phone. That's all right.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
Yep, yeah.
613, good morning.
Good morning. This is Martha Mulenga.
Oh, Ms. Martha Mulenga from Ottawa, Canada.
Ottawa, yes.
Sounds good. How is Ottawa today?
Cold.
Cold. And I wish you well. We passed
We've
through.
Already got
we passed through that last week, so we are okay over here. Cletus, how are you, my brother?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Where are you today?
I'm in New York, New York.
Okay, New York, New York today. Good, good. In 2 minutes' time, I'm going to be handing over to my brother in Toronto, I think. Saba, we are going to be having a roundtable as we continue our e-conference. So before I do that, I just want to make some announcements for next week. We are going to have an independence celebration on this show. We are hoping to bring in Dr. Gray Zuru. I don't know if it's Dr. Gray Zuru. Dr. Gray Zuru should be coming to give us some insights of our independence in Zambia. So stay tuned and be part of the show. Today we continue with our and to begin our show, I think. Mustafa, are you ready?
Yes, thank you very much. Roger, and I'll take it. You are also part of the round table to discuss doing business in Zambia. Is that right?
That is fine, and we want to make it clear to our callers. The first part of this show, you may have to just listen in. There are those people who are part of the group we are discussing throughout the week. Those will be in the round table. For those who are not part of the email e-conference during the week, please just listen in. In the last hour, we are going to open up the mics and bring you in and be part of the discussion. So don't be frustrated. Keep calling in and let's flow. You are right, Mustafa. Let's go.
Okay. Thank you very much again. Let me go back and just welcome the people that are already on the line. And here it's Ms. Mwansa Mulenga from Ottawa. Hello?
Mwate Mulenga.
Mwate Mulenga, sorry.
Mwate, Mwate. M-W-A, Mwate.
M-W-A-T-E.
Or Mwate.
Mwate Mulenga.
Yes.
M-W-A-T-E.
That's it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Almost Mwata. Royal Highness.
I can also be Mwata.
Yes. Cletus, welcome back.
Yes, sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
How are you? Today I'm just moderating the show. We are trying to get a little bit deeper in our discussion and a little bit more focused so that we can come out with something at the end of the whole conference. Charles Mwewa from Toronto. How are you?
Welcome. I'm here.
Bright Chingania, Australia, who's also part
yes.
of the moderating team of the doing business in Zambia. Is Titus online too?
Titus is bringing in our guest from Zambia.
Okay, he's trying to get in, Mr. Thompson. Okay, thank you very much. Now, for just so we can see where we've been as far as Zambian business is concerned and where we'd like to go, I'm going to start with Charles. In one word, can you please describe Zambia 40 years ago?
In one word, promising.
Roger?
40 years ago, the previous was confused with a very interesting answer. But yes, I'll concur with him. I'll go promising as well.
Okay. Miss Mulenga.
Heaven.
Fletcher.
40 years ago. Okay, I could have just been an infant. But I guess the promise of Zambia 40 years ago was really big. And to be very, very frank, the people who existed there, I mean, prior to the struggle for independence from the colonialists, really had a very big
okay.
dream. And
we are trying to do it in one word, so that
In one word?
In one word.
It was the Zambia they promised.
Okay. And Bright Chingania from Australia.
Well, I would say 40 years ago, Zambia was, you know, we had hope for the future. It was hopeful.
Hopeful, okay. Now we have one hopeful, one heaven, and three promising. We fast forward 40 years later, and we are here, 2009. Can we go back again, starting with Cletus? One word again, describe Zambia today.
At the crossroad.
Crossroad. Bright?
Comparing to 40 years ago, I can say reverse.
Reverse. Miss Mwate Mulenga.
Mess.
Mess?
Yes, the mess.
As M-E-S-S. Okay, and Charles?
Struggling.
Ugly?
Struggling.
Oh, sorry, I didn't get that.
Struggling.
Oh, struggling, sorry.
Yeah.
And Roger, finally?
Full of potential.
Full of potential. Okay, this was just a little bit of an exercise to help us understand what situation we are in Zambia. Zambia is a country with a lot of pieces, and because there are so many pieces, we just have to grab a piece out of the so many pieces and try to see what we can do to reverse the situation or to improve the situation. For people that say 40 years ago Zambia was promising and was heaven and hopeful, is there a chance that, what we'd like to see is if there is a chance to bring that promise back and bring that heaven back. For when we go to how Zambia is today, we see some people that have, one person said we're at the crossroads, we've gone backwards, we're in the mess, struggling, and full of potential. All the answers, all of the above, are correct. Now, with everything that we've described Zambia in mind, and with the theme that we have and the group that we belong in doing business in Zambia, the issues that have been raised via Block Talk Radio and email, do you think Zambia needs a requirements document of some sort which will culminate into a template by which most, if not all development protocols can be carried out? What I mean is that because you guys describe how Zambia was in the past, and you also describe how Zambia is today, do you think we need to create some kind of document that can be directing us in where we should be going? Let me start with Bryce.
Okay. In answering that question, are you trying to say the document that we're going to create, is it going to be a yardstick for the nation or the yardstick for our group?
So this is specific to doing business in Zambia. So we are not going to be to address all issues regarding Zambia. These are just business issues.
Okay. Having heard you putting the question in a clear perspective, I would say yes. I think we need a document, or we need some set guidelines of how to do business in Zambia. That will help for people who have no ideas. People who are just coming to do business in Zambia, they have no strategy. They'll have a starting point if we have this document put across. Of course, it will just act as a guideline, or it will be some sort of generic document which will be measured by maybe some world standard or developed country kind of standard. Without having this document or something documented, then we'll not be able to do a straightforward business in Zambia. That's my own view.
Okay. Cletus, do you agree or disagree?
I do agree. What my suggestion is, according to the things that we discussed and the papers that were presented last week, I guess, we can come up with a paper, we can come up with recommendations, but all those things, then we leave it to some other people to implement them or to make decision whether they are viable or not. I was thinking, Mr. Chairman, that we have to grab, this issue by the horns ourselves. For example, we identified some areas. I raised the question of how can the diaspora trying to do business in Zambia raise capital, And that is up to us to come up with a solution that this e-conference must consider and try to take positive actions towards this realization.
Okay, that's good. I think we've heard the views from other listeners, other contributors to the roundtable. Miss Mulenga, do you have your views? I'm not sure if you were part of the listeners last week, or maybe you followed, but are you do you have anything to add when it comes to this document?
I haven't been part of the discussion from the beginning, so it may be redundant, but what I can point out is having a document is something, and I agree with the last speaker that implementing that document is another. So first, the environment on the ground has to be right for that document, when drawn, to be useful and effective. No matter how good a document may be, if the environment is not right, that document will just be gathering dust on somebody's shelf.
Okay, that's good input, and that's why we are trying to, if we are going to design a system, we have to design a system with safeguards to protect the document, to make sure it's being handled or it's going only into the right places and to the right people, and being followed up by the right people so that we can achieve what we are trying to achieve. Going with the theme, visioning diaspora involvement in Zambia's development, do you think the diaspora would be better served with the creation of an institution? This is now following up with the document that we might come up as participants in this conference on the doing business in Zambia. Now, as part of that, would there be a need of creating an institution which is divorced from government, but takes not only the initiative, but also the responsibility to oversee business development and matters of research and development, for that matter? Charles, do you think that would be the right way to go, considering, I mean, there's already concerns being raised about the document just collecting dust?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think and I believe that that would be the right course of action to take for two reasons only. First reason is that, first of all, the document is just a vision, just the idea, the blueprint of where we want to go, both as an organization and as the people of Zambia in this context. Now, that document, as others have said, stands the chance to only gather dust or just be wiped out from our ideals. What will necessitate that that document becomes actionable is the fact that it is a backing institution. And that institution, in my view, must be created. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much. Roger, you have anything to add to the creation of the institution as something that would make sure the document that's produced is implemented correctly?
Definitely. As you may be aware, diaspora, as I think individuals, we are contributing in one way or another back home. But the creation of an institution will allow, if you like, to consolidate our efforts and therefore make even our case in Zambia as a group even more meaningful. So I agree, create the document to follow it up with an organization which we will be, if you like, better to Zambia.
Let me go back to Ms. Mulenga, because she's the one who raised the point of the document becoming, useless if no one takes it up. Zambia Diaspora Connect itself, or Zambians in the diaspora, work together to make sure we have this institution that's going to manage the document. Would you think that would be the right way to go? Is Ms. Mulenga still around? Okay, maybe we can push that question to Clayton. He had similar views.
Yeah, the document and the institution that has to manage it?
Yes.
Yes, you know, we have had, as a follow-up to the things that I presented, I had a lengthy chat with the Bank of Zambia and the people at the Zambia Revenue Authority. You know, everybody will tell you that there exists to some extent institutions that handle this and handle that. And the problem is diaspora is in a very unique position, especially the Zambian diaspora. You know, it has these problems that are very unique to its existence. And if we had an institution, as you said, that will help, because
we have to have tailor-made, you know, kind of policies and legislation that will push the diaspora program forward and to be workable.
Okay, that's good. Let me just recap so that Mr. Mponda can come in. We've had an opportunity to bring him in. He was a presenter last weekend, and because he's involved in a lot of business activity in Zambia, it's only best that we get his views on this one. I don't know for how long he could have been listening before he was connected, but let me just give him a short background. We are discussing the idea of creating a document that would kind of create a pathway or a set of protocols that can be followed by Zambians in the diaspora, and indeed Zambians in Zambia, to promote doing business in Zambia. Now, with this, others say this document might just be a waste of time if no one takes it up, and we are suggesting that we have an institution created that can take use of it. Now, as a businessman and someone involved in the role of businesses in Zambia, do you think it's a good idea to have this institution that can act as a meeting place or something that can be used to implement the document for business development? Mr. Mponda.
Well, thank you very much. I think I've taken the thank you for the recap for me. I think, of course, we understand here the issues for the diaspora is the distance between wherever you are and being at home. It's the same as people say you're on the sea, maybe trying to do something at the bottom of the sea. I can assure you, trying to come up with a law or a particular document for you, first of all, even if we are to ask the diaspora, yes, we appreciate that you are in a very unique situation, but so is the different people living in the diaspora. Someone in Canada has a unique position with someone in Botswana, in the Congo. So for you to streamline and get a document that will work for you, in any case, people have different needs at different times. Now, we don't need to recreate other institutions particularly for you, because those now start competing, and what is someone's sideline? There is enough legislation what governs. If it is investment, everyone should go through a normal way. But I've been of the opinion that what the diaspora, people living in the diaspora need to do is to register even the diaspora in Zambia. You appoint a CEO, so that the sole responsibility of this CEO is to be able to respond to particular needs of the people living in the diaspora. It has to be someone you can employ based in Zambia and who reports even the diaspora. You create like a board without necessarily changing legislation. And I think what you need is that when you anticipate, maybe information comes a bit late, I can assure you, It's a very difficult situation that you can be living outside Zambia, maybe you're in the UK. When you want to go to town, the bus comes at a particular time. You can even calculate the move that I move from the eastern side here at 2:45, 15 minutes I drop off here. But the infrastructure back home, yes, you have been exposed and seen the environment, but Zambia has lagged behind. So you have to take Zambia at the level where it is. And we have those challenges to streamline these issues relating to doing business. I think as a start, starting to register legislation, which will all other institutions, whether government or private, will subject themselves to, requires the constitution, and I'm sure that's a longer way. But today, if someone has a business idea or wants to be back, to be able to do something back home, all you need is pure information to act on. I don't think the problem is as big as you might want to portray it. There is a way. If, for example, today you say, okay, I want to find a plot in Mansa, it's a question of someone can tell you whether Mansa has got the plots to give or not and what the conditions are. It's pure feedback. So I think we have to be a bit simplistic for now, and we shouldn't sound so complex, because then everyone starts running away, thinking, oh, the diaspora, I think they're in so much complicated problems. I don't think the problem is as big as we might want to portray it. The first stage would be to appoint, even if you have to create a company where the diaspora appoints this person here, to be able to be accountable. I think then things start getting streamlined. Because whilst we have the challenge in Zambia, it's also a challenge. If ask someone in Australia today what his worst nightmare is and someone who's maybe in the UK or Argentina, I'm sure the needs will be different. I don't know if that has helped.
Yes, yes, it has. It has helped greatly, and I understand where you're coming from, and what you have said is actually very accurate, except I think where I was talking about the document, there I was not clear, because the other half of your comments are completely in line of what I think we are saying. The document is not about creating new rules and new legislation. It started with people defining how they saw Zambia 40 years ago and how they see Zambia today. So the document is about the requirement of things that need to be done, not how they need to be done. And I think,
okay,
if we say we needed certain facilities in Zambia, and I'm sure that document will be the same because the needs in Zambia are the same. So regardless of whether someone is on Australia and in Moscow and in Ghana, they'll be able to see that there is this need in Bangweulu. And I think I'm from Bangweulu. Maybe I can apply my services there. So that's what I just wanted to clarify that. But as your overall...
Okay, that's okay. But then the document, what was the import? What would be the import of this particular document? All I'm saying is that I know in Zambia there's a lot of documentation. If there's any one big asset Zambia has, is documentation and reports about everything. Now, what would be the need, the use of that document? Will it define rules? Would it define the roadmaps to do something? That's what I'm saying. That's part I didn't get because I joined in a bit late. All I'm saying is that a document, people, yeah.
Let me just chip in, Mr. Musonda. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Okay, let me just chip in. This is Bright. Hello, yes. This is Bright from Australia. Now, the document that the chairman was trying to say is that basically it's just a summary of what is already in existence, okay? It's just in a summary, because at the moment, I mean, we have a lot of information, Zambia, as you have just said, that we are so rich with all this information about investments, but the information that is there at the moment is just scanty, it's just scattered everywhere. Now, if for someone like me who is living in Australia, should go to one document whereby he'll be able to find at least all the necessary things that I need there.
Give an example. Let's be practical. Give me an example.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Right. So give me an example.
Okay, I give you an example. Okay, you know, for example, okay, I want to invest, okay, let's say in the area of, area of mining, you know, in the area of mining. Of course, there is a lot of information if I go to the, to the website. But if there can be one simple document, you know, some sort of a summary what is already in existence, and also a summary whereby, I mean, a document whereby we have agreed with the government and the people in, diaspora, you know, somehow we have discussed with them and we have agreed on one or two things. We are not going to change anything, but it's just a summary that's going to give us a backing or some weight on what we want to do.
Yes, Okay, I understand. I understand. The input that Mr. Mponda gave us is very, very important. And the problem that we have had for us in the diaspora is actually getting the information. So, and that's why we say that as someone who's been in business in Zambia, it's important we get information like that. Probably the help we can get is having that information put in one place. Now, I think I have Dr. Luko. Is Dr. Luko on the line?
Hello?
Is Dr. Luko on the line from the UK?
Hello, I haven't got the number. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Are you on speakerphone, sir?
Okay, I'll take that. Hello,
thank
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
May I say thank you very much to allow me this opportunity and following the deliberations. I think Zambia, we are in the right direction as per the way you're thinking. My contribution here will come straight on the existing setup and the need for the document. I may say that need for the document at this stage is not the biggest issue. And I draw this from my own experience in the past 3 years. 5 years in total, going in and out of Zambia, in the UK, to try and do business. We ourselves in the UK formed up a similar initiative that you've started, which I appreciate so much. I believe, and I concur with the last speaker, who talked about being simple. I discovered that systems in Zambia can work for you for a few. And I believe for us to do effective business in Zambia, employing people is one of the best ways. We tried two things ourselves. The first one, we appointed people who can work for us for free as members. That did not work very well. Then we started to open up a company and employ somebody on a full-time basis to work for us. That started working very well, because the employee is expecting to be paid and they do a good job. And in the process, provided information to us, which was useful for us to. And thereafter, discovered that actually, Zambian people are very innovative. But all they need is motivation by the people, as we discovered, living abroad. For some reasons, they believe us more than they believe your local Zambians in the mainland. So using these two factors of leverage, we can actually work directly with our fellow Zambians on the ground by way of employment. And I think my contribution on that bit has come by experience. And I think in my observation, I noticed that you as a Zambian living abroad, you will not be believed that you don't have much money in your pocket. You are always believed you have a lot of money. That's one thing.
Dr. Luko, is that background noise coming from your area?
Not at all. I'm alone in the house and there's no construction work at all. I think somebody else in
okay.
The
studio. Yeah, we have a lot of people on the line.
I just have a little submission here.
No, wait until you are called upon, please. We have a lot of people on the line. We don't know whose house there is noise, and this thing is being recorded for our final documentation. So please, if you are in a house,
but
where
I just
there is noise,
that this debate is going off track. If I can get correct, we have 6 or 7 questions lined up, and it's like we are answering the first question and we jump to the seventh. I think this will create some sort of confusion. If we follow the question as the chairman is asking, all those questions and certain assumptions which are being put forward, they are all covered in the 60th question, which asks for the responsibilities whether to facilitate business initiatives ourselves or to set up this factor. But I see that others are already answering these questions before we go to question number 5. So this is creating a little bit of a confusion to some of us. Why
Charles,
can't we stick with a question and answer? Then we'll come to those that need to create this later.
Charles, let's just let's try not to jump in when other people are speaking. We are trying to control the noise. So sorry about that. So the noise is gone. Dr. Luko, can you finish up your thought, please?
Yes, indeed. Yes. So I would say that the need for the document can be there, but just as a guideline. But what needs to happen, basically, is to be pragmatic, we set up a business institution, employ people, then they coordinate for us. A document is good, but it can be just a general guideline, because we need these guidelines, they're important, but not the main thing. I think I'll rest my case on that point.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm also aware that Mr. Msonda has only 20 minutes because he has some other engagement. I don't know how much time he has left with us.
No, don't worry, I'll stick around for another 20. At the end of the day, it's very important. I'll stick for another 20 minutes, see, since I'm already connected. I realize the importance of the discussion, and I beg that I'm in the background because I also want to appreciate where we can assist. So I'm on standby, and I'm listening and following through. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Right now, I mean, the issue of, yes, we agree, and I think the idea of this discussion is to come up with all the e-conferences that we have, we come up with documents. So regardless of what is decided here, we are always going to write a paper. So that paper will be written. But the advice of making it simple and doing things in this way, or asking for the right information, and I think that becomes very critical. I take the advice of registering and even appointing a CEO, as Mr. Mwansa said. We already have a registered business for Zambia Diaspora Connect, and we want people to be aware that there is more that needs to be done. Now, with this in mind of setting up, say, a business, as Dr. Luko said, and appointing a CEO, as Mr. Msonda said, let me go to Charles. What do you think should be the logical timeline for setting up this kind of thing, starting from today, considering we are already behind the ball?
I think taking into consideration these factors, 1 year could do. Did you get me, Mr. Chairman?
Say that again?
1 year.
No, from now to in the next year?
Yeah, that's 12 months from now, because we have to also look, I take into consideration the contributions of the two last speakers, is that some of these information is already there. Like those who do business in Zambia, they already know about these. But, you know, also us, we have a sense of agency, because we have to put these together. And the people like me and others who are not aware of these things can get to this information. So I propose, that's my view, that 12 months is enough to do that.
Okay. Mr. Mwansa, let me get back to you, because you're on the ground there. You know how much it costs to rent a place and to have an office, and, you know. How reasonable is it that we can make arrangement with existing organizations, that we contribute something in form of what we have here, and they offer us office space?
I think that one way forward would be that the fact that you make a move, that you have a person on the ground who should be sourcing this information, then at that point, since the government has given you a desk, given at the state house, right, then what you'd be saying, for example, we have the Zambia Development Agency, you're going to be requesting to get an office which they can give you for 12 months. You tell them, we'll pay for this CEO, and the job for the CEO will be identification and sourcing the specific information, meaning that if my brother in Australia would like to say, look, I want to go into mining or gold processing in Kasama, this CEO will be able either to outsource or engage a consultant and give a quotation to the initiator of that project in Australia to say, look, there is a mining consultant who can get this information for at 4,000. What is the timeline? Then you engage and you sign documentation. as long as you have this contact person, I am sure then it will not be too much for you to ask the government that near ZDA, because that is close to where a lot of projects are coming, then they would have given you purely a desk, and this person doesn't have bloated the managers or assistants. He's purely a coordinator who coordinates, so that there is more specific feedback and timely feedback. And if any person or a group of people living in the diaspora would want a particular project promoted, you can have an option of either sourcing consultants here to do it, or even sending your own people from where you could be. That way it will be fast tracked, because the on the document it will just be a generic thing, but ultimately for any business proposal you can ever come up with, information will have to be as specific as possible. Where it requires other licensing, they'll be able to facilitate that. I think that is the way to go. And the major thing, I don't know if you have tackled it, the need for people living in the diaspora, since you are networked, to encourage saving. If there can be a way, I remember one time I was talking to the Bank of Zambia government that we can create an account even at the Bank of Zambia where it doesn't matter you're sending $10, $20 to a cousin in Zambia. We need to start tracking the effect of this food. People send money by Western Union, everything's up as that. So we just need to start managing what is happening now, so that then people can have proper information to plan and see the impact that the people living in the diaspora are contributing to this economy. There's a lot of contribution that happens even if you send a gift, but no one sits to record and see the potential we have to benefit from that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Titus, any addition to what Mr. Msondal just mentioned?
Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Mr. Msonda, that's a good point. I wanted to find out also on this issue we are talking about, that if, let's say, the document was there, or the person who is either a CEO running diaspora issues is available, at what rate do you think people will listen from him? Because this is, again, another thing that we see, that sometimes if it's an NGO, it's like a... is not really respected, but it might be doing the right thing. It's just grouped into these other things. At what rate is the government and everybody going to listen to this person who is not engineered by either the government, is like, oh, these diaspora people? How powerful will that be from this person, so that something needs to be done?
Well, I know. I'm sure for me, I've never been a very good speculator. I believe if I have to try a seed of maize, I'll say, let me plant it, water it, then if it should fail me, I should see either it has a standard growth or it doesn't produce. The only way we'll move forward is by taking something like a sausage. Step one, let's move in. You have a desk dealing with the diaspora, sure, at the State House today. And it's not about this person going around to throw his weight. He will purely be an employee who's responsible. If you tell him, can I get the latest statistics on the population growth in the Copper Belt, he is simply to go to the statistics office and transmit it. He will not be creative, and he will not go around showing his weight about anything else. He will be an employee who will be accountable to board members appointed by people living in the diaspora. You can also nominate a few in Zambia. I don't think it's any issue of campaign or being listened to. What you want is information, whether in Luansha, in Lusaka. So we need to do this first and see where it takes us. And we will not have a defeatist attitude that is not work. It will work, I can assure you. Look at today, you are doing this whatever. Now we are discussing. You came up with an idea to introduce this gentleman, and I'm not sure most of you are seeing how much ground you are covering every day. All of a sudden, people never thought about you guys out there. But I'm telling you, today in the Constitution, for you to be discussed and say, people will be entitled to a dual citizenship, it has solved all your major problems. But what you need to do is to get things on the ground, so that when that Constitution is endorsed, surely you're on firm ground to move on. So we cannot speculate how he's fixed it. If he doesn't perform, he'll be fired and you employ another one. His will be to deliver.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with Mr. Msonda. So any around the same field would like to see like the scope, because really most people look in terms of power and what you can do and what you can do. When I should agree that this is just about service and providing a product. If people want to buy into it, they buy into it. If they don't want to buy into it, they don't buy into it. Now, generally speaking, I would like us to discuss issues regarding bringing businesses together and buyers within Zambia, sourcing investment, job creation initiatives, macro credit for small businesses, and even training, offering training to for us to be trained about what's going on in Zambia and for us to train other people about the things that we know. Because we have about 15 minutes left, and I've mentioned these things so that we have an idea of what we need to talk about, and so that everyone can chip in briefly. So starting, I think, with Roger, do you have any ideas that we as a diaspora can apply to help job creation in Zambia?
Yes, well, ideas are there, and I want to agree with Mr. Msonda in Zambia. First, I think it was a discussion on the phone. We in the diaspora, not everyone has a good job, but we in the diaspora, most of us have some kind of income. If it is $10 or anything, we put it together, put it in some form of investment or buy some equipment. We can create jobs. There are a lot of people in Zambia. I wrote in one of the papers who are looking for partnerships. The businesses are there. They are lacking financing, and some of them only need about 10,000. Yes, the diaspora can come together, put their resources together, and can create employment next month. We are not talking about next year or 10 years from today. There we can be creating employment next, but all we need to do is to become proactive.
Let us on the same subject.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just wish to say, like, you know, I agree with what Mr. Msonda said, but one thing that must be borne in mind is that, you know, diaspora looks real like a difficult, you know, packet. Yet, the people in diaspora, you know, throughout where we are, we share the same challenges and the same problems. Our problems are similar from coast to coast and from MC to MC. And, you know, this has to do with their doing business in Zambia. He suggested that we appoint a CEO. Quite all right. But I think there should be a buffer, a bridge, like we should have an institution specifically for the diaspora. You know, we don't ask for laws and, you know, changing of existing laws. And, you know, we need a buffer, you know, like a bridge. If you have a CEO in Zambia, without an institution, you know, it's going to be difficult. And we're talking about money. Capital is money. We need some kind of a credit union for the diaspora.
Okay, that's good. Let me go to Dr. Luko in the UK, and I think he's in charge of Makaya Wingi.
That's right.
Without really going into details about Makaya Wingi, with the experiences with that organization, how do you look at microcredit finance for small businesses in Zambia?
thank you very much. First and foremost, it can be viable, but there may be difficulties in paying back microfinancing. If you want to lend people money, it can be difficult. My experience is that many Zambians doing business in Zambia, they are on the loan, and not paying back in good time. But if there was a system that can help them dovetail with training, because the kind of lending on microsystems in Zambia, there's no training at all. This poor businessman comes to borrow. Now, if we abroad as we plan to do in terms of microfinancing, we put money on the side. We have a chance of succeeding if and only if there's a training component in which we are directly involved to make that these people we put money in can bring money back in terms of a return. Because it's business. I'm not going to put money into something that will be taking money away from me all the time. I need to have a return. If we can find a way of educating people to be financially prudent and manage the finances, that can work. What I discovered was that many of the people that came forward, have come forward, we were much into the program now, is that they have very good ideas. But when you look at their financial management, there are issues there. Very big issues, I tell you that. So we need to be very careful. And the other thing I discovered is that even as living abroad, although we sound hopeful like this, when it comes to actually taking your cash and put it in the common basket, many people struggle. Not because they don't want, simply because many people are in debt. So there is, I concur with one speaker, Mr. Msonda, who said that we need to start savings. There is not a saving culture in our community. So these things can be viable only if the mindset is changed amongst the Zambians.
Okay, thank you very much. Titus, on sourcing of investment, and I think it ties in because Dr. Luco mentioned the issues with microcredit. Now, with regard to investment, how would that help? Maybe coming from savings?
Yes, I think it's a very important topic that I, the only way I see it, and this is just my view, you are free to assess it. I think myself in this situation of trying to create a micro lending, I think we would be more creative into job situation, if at all. I mean, look at the newest budget. If we could get into things that we negotiate, if it's a truck or something that we can give to the government and ask for certain contracts that they can do. I mean, they're always having problems with FRA or something like that to transport produce. If we can come in that way, at least we would have created a job, and then we can work hand in hand with the central bank in terms of funding, like the other person said, creating a bank through Bank of Zambia or something like that, and it's recognized. So we move in with helping the government at the same time helping the diaspora itself in terms of an investment. I would think that would be a better way, because you have a way to check something and the government can advise. Mr. Msonda can come in handy. That's what I think myself.
Okay, very, very good point. Just to mention that for those of you that are listening in, please wait for the third hour. This is the first hour. The third hour is when we'll be receiving calls from outside. The second hour, we are going to have a discussion from the skills and identity to be moderated by our very own Chasa Chilima. And that is going to be an interesting one also. But in the final hour, that's when we are going to have discussion. We have about 6 minutes in this segment. And I would like at least each and everyone to have something to say about where we are going. But before I do that, personally, I feel that Zambia has a lot of things in place. And there are businesses and people in the diaspora, and we just don't know how to find each other. Charles, do you have any thoughts on how we can try to connect with businesses in Zambia, even diaspora with diaspora, so that we can do projects in Zambia?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just be brief. I believe that we are already on the right track, because right now at this forum we are already attracting some very brilliant minds, I can judge. That's first. Secondly, I believe in that institution that we have talked about. That, to me, is the solution. Why is it the solution? Because I see that it can have two functions. The first function, it can have facilitation, where it collects information about Zambians, about who are living in the diaspora. It can have a bank, a sort of a information bank about businesses in Zambia. And when it achieves that objective, it can now go to the engagement of these, you know, distorted thoughts and put them together so that we have a coherent database of people, whether in the diaspora or in Zambia, that are engaged in one particular business or another. I believe in that institution. And when we form that institution, we mandate it to collect such information through the internet, through the, you know, access to information in Zambia, through any other channel that we can find available. But when we give it the mandate to have the responsibility to outsource that information, that will not be a problem. And then from that information, we can create all the opportunities we've talked about and reach our destination and our goal. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your views. Now we have to be very brief. Mr. Msonda, your general feelings or views about the conference and the future of Zambia and diaspora involvement.
Well, thank you very much. I think ultimately everything suggested surely is workable. But for me, being on the ground, I always believe in practicality. There are short-term plans, medium-term plans, and most of these are really long-term. Eh? But in the short to medium, all I can say is that the creation of an institution in a short term, it always comes maybe close to medium to long term. But at a point, at this point in time, what we can do is to request that the existing institutions incorporate the diaspora group as an immediate step, which is practical. Because then you can ride on some existing information with having someone to push that agenda. After all, we are attempting to refine and have results. Meanwhile, you will be trying to consolidate the biggest the challenges you have in the diaspora, also in Zambia. But I'm telling you, there are some of the needs we have in Zambia might not require even $5,000. You know, there are people in Zambia, if you go under, even before this Export Board of Zambia, people requesting honey, that in Canada they want honey, these organic foods, and no one in Zambia could supply them. But you have small people in Kapiri doing honey, others in Northwestern province. It's purely a management and a coordination. And once you have a business plan, people can provide money. And there are institutions in Zambia, either the German, European Union institutions, World Bank, supporting this. But the problem is that the ordinary Zambians who have the honey on the ground, they do not have the technical know-how, how they can link with this donor and champion the way forward. All I'm saying is that there is a way, the capacity you have can be used in a short term to medium term.
Thank you very much, Mr. Msonda. And Cletus.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the deliberation that have been going on, and especially on the issue of how we can move forward. And I guess to some, you know, we have had a lot of agreement on this, and that we need a representative that is going to work for the diaspora. And I guess we all agree that we need an institution as well. So I don't know how this can be, you know, broken down into for the short term, the medium term, and the long term. Thank you very much.
Okay. So I think right now I can only say that I think we've listened to everyone that was on the round table, and we have to continue with the email exchanges. We have to clarify a lot of things. Most of us were actually saying the same thing. It was important, and it was very good that we had very good input from Mr. Msonda and Dr. Lukomona from the United Kingdom, and everyone contributed very well. And I hope we continue doing that through the email so that we can come up with a viable paper that will be part of the final e-conference document. For now, stay tuned for the next hour, which will be managed by our friend, moderator, for skills and identity, and Josiah Chilima. Thank you very much, everyone from the Doing Business in Zambia. It was a great program, and I'm sure Zambians everywhere are proud of your contribution. Thank you.
You're very much welcome.
Thank you so much. Before we go to London, Ontario, just a small break. And this is Zambia Block Talk Radio. We are having an e-conference, and those who want to call in and listen, the number to call is 347-237-4270. Next week, we are having an independent celebration. We are expecting Mr. Gray Zulu to be in the house and share with us. And next week, we'll be concluding our e-conference, a summary report will be given. On the 31st of October, we are going to be having a budget discussion. So please come in. We have invited a professor from the University of Zambia, Dr. Ngandwe, and the Manufacturer Association of Zambia is going to be with us. So with that, let me go to London, Ontario. Josiah Chilima, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Roger. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. How's London today?
It's very well. Nice, actually. A bit cold. We are getting slowly into winter. Otherwise, the atmosphere is just right for a good job talking to a Zambian.
Thank
you very much, Roger. How are you today? I've been just fine.
I'm back today. Okay, so Tata is waiting to hear one of the computers which are on to go off. Please, we can hear it in the system.
Okay, are we
ahead,
in real
Tata.
Time now? Okay, thank you very
yes,
much.
Okay.
Thank you very much to my colleagues in the first half of the show. I was quite insightful hearing various views on what the way forward is for our country. In our segment today, at least, we're going to talk about our group, which is the skills and identity. And just give a brief introduction. Last week when we set off the show with a regular discussion, a lot of information came out. And what obviously became apparent is the fact that whatever we want to achieve for our country, there are so many fields, and time is never on our side. And so the approach we have taken is to try and deal with issues in detail. And as you know, as I say, the Chinese say, the journey of 1,000 miles up is more steps. Now, our group is very overacting because you have under skills and identity, we had papers under education, we also had the paper from biotechnology, and of course we had a discussion on culture and identity. So the plan that we had this week in the email discussions was first of all to look at what the problems are in this particular field, and then the hope is that for next week we're now going to see what solutions we think can be availed, and also what is the role of the diaspora in all this. I would like to acknowledge, first of all, one of my panelists today, Mwata Chisha. How are you, Mwata?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Mwata is actually very much interested in Zambian culture. He's calling in from Wisconsin. He's an educator. And he says his passion is to teach economics, sustainable development, and also leadership. Mwata, what do you think were some of the highlights of the conference?
In the segment that I participated in, you mean?
Yes. Yes.
I'm actually concerned a lot about the rate at which our culture is being drowned by the external influences. This is happening, I don't think, with the conscience of the people, but it is like every Zambian is in a zombie stage, and they're just being ridden to some direction they don't know. So yeah, I'm interested in you know, holding robust conversations with my fellow Zambians across the globe regarding our culture and how how our culture can be resuscitated, and if we can have our cultural institutions reconstructed to a point where we can keep the roots alive and use it in business and in various other areas of our development.
Thank you very much. That's wonderful. Our introduction and insight. In Japan, we do have Simon Sakala. Simon Sakala is an educator. He actually runs a school for children. And so his passion, as you all know, is education. And actually, he's invented some methods of teaching special children. Simon, how are you?
Good, thank you. It's nice to hear from you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well.
Okay.
Let the ball rolling. What were your impressions of the conference call, by especially the email discussion segment?
Okay, I learned a lot, and I think this is a very big step in our efforts to do what we can for our country. But I'd like to let the, I think one of the issue that came up is the issue of the curriculum for education in Zambia. It was very, it came out so clearly in many emails that we know it's not adequate. We need, something needs to be done about the curriculum. And of course, there's many other things that we can deal with, but for now, this is one area that I thought really needs attention. And what if the other areas that are directly connected with the curriculum, which I think in my view the teacher training and education materials and I think, yeah.
Okay. Well, just out of interest, you know, what's the time there?
Oh, yes. This is 10 minutes after 11. This is 3:30. Then 3:10.
Oh, okay, so very soon you'll be going into Sunday.
Yes, right. In about 50 minutes we'll be going to Sunday. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us at this late hour. And as you know, what has happened now with technology is that we can still connect and talk about this one country that we love. I would like to start with Mwata. You've talked so passionately about our culture and identity, and I must say your thoughts were very enlightening to me, to an extent where we realize there's so much about our country and our culture that I don't know, and I'm sure other people feel the same. The common question that came for most participants also was culture and identity. Where do you even start? Like, in your view, where do you start?
Well, they are what I would call low-hanging fruit, okay, in our country. We have, first in the education segment there, when we were discussing our education segment, I did mention that we can begin, because some of these things, they don't need money, they don't need to be included in the budget. All they need to do is say it. That to be stated that this is what we want to do. For instance, why do we have a road called Great North Road? Why don't we have a name for, say, is that me?
I think so.
You have 1:10.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Mwata, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, can you go ahead, please?
Okay. What I was saying was that why don't we have the names of the roads change? Like, say, for instance, instead of having Great North Road, why don't we have Munuka Yumbus Palo, for instance, or Harry Mwamba Nkumbula, you know, Road, something like that. these things don't need money. All they need is to be stated, this is what we're going to do and this is what we're going to have. That is a demonstration of our culture. This is who we are. These are the people who represent our nation. And we begin from there, simple steps. And then we move into how we are going to design our communities. How is the next community going to be designed? We look at how a community setup used to be. We had Nsaka in the middle and all that kind of stuff. Some of these things are, you know, would sound simple, but they would have a significant impact if they were brought back. In the West, we have what they call gated communities, where people, you know, live in a closed environment. We used to live in environments like that. And then they have play centers within, you know, those areas, and they have common areas where they would meet and have parties, birthday parties, for instance. Why don't we have things like that, where we design a community in such a way that there is a meeting place somewhere, and there is a specific purpose why we design it that way, and we let everybody who reside in that area to understand that this is what we're coming, what we, you know, we are trying to accomplish. And then we have people actually using those facilities for their specific purpose. Those are some of the low-hanging fruit that we can say this is what we're going to do. The other thing I would say is when we go into schools, instead of mandating that, you know, we are going to have a curriculum for this and this and this and this, teaching kids to be respectful and stuff like that. No. We can begin with language being the conduit for transmission of culture being taught in schools. Why don't we have one of the languages in any local area to be the premier language before English? But right now we have kids learning how to speak English before they would even learn their mother language, the mother tongue. Why don't we begin from, you know, low-hanging fruit, and then we move on to building the institutions themselves?
Thank you very much. At this point, I'd like to acknowledge some of the guests from the previous section. Dr. Mwanzelu Komona, are you still with us?
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Mulukomon, are you still with us?
Yes, indeed. Can you hear me? Yes, we can
Hello?
Hear you. Can
yeah,
you
we
hear
can
me?
Hear you. Can you? Yes?
Yes, indeed, yes. Hello, how are you, sir?
Okay, thank you very much. There's also a caller on Skype. Can you identify yourself, please? Okay. Bryce Chingan in Australia, are you still with us? Okay. Moving on, Mr. Sakala.
Yeah.
Education. Where do you start to reform our system to a level where we are comfortable with it as Zambians, in the same way that right now, a lot of us who went through the system are complaining about how standards have gone down to an extent where if I went back to the school where I was educated and asked them to form 4 or grade 11, as they call it today, he probably would not have the same level of articulation, be it in math and English. And there's also another side to that, that now because of this low standards in, say, government schools, a lot of private schools have been set up. And what you then have is a situation in where those with the money will obviously send their children to school, and those without will be confined to a life of hopelessness. What's your take?
Oh, yes. First of all, I'd like to begin by just talking a little bit about what I'm doing here. Yes, I am teaching. I'm teaching. I teach English, and most of my students are children. And I'm living in Japan, and everybody recognizes what sort of a country it is. Now, this country doesn't have a lot of natural resources like we do. But one thing they've done is they've made education a very big priority, and it's just in the culture. Every family has a high a high proportion of the budget allocated to education for the children. And of course, the member saying with the limited kula empanga, and the only way we can prepare or build our future society is by taking care of the children. We neglect the education of the children, then we of course committing it's like suicide for the future of our communities, and it's the children that make up the community. So I've seen the importance of education and what it can do, you know, to a nation if it's given the right place. Now, having said that, it would be very unfair to compare like Zambia to Japan, because the in many ways is too far apart. But what I like to see is improvement in the levels of education. And it's true that the if I look at like what my children are learning here, my son is grade 3, and my daughter is grade 2 in the government schools here. But the things that they learn are much, much higher in many ways as compared to back home. And I can see that given the time, the materials, and with the right curriculum, children have a very high potential of absorbing whatever they learn, and which prepares them effectively for the output. And now, how can we go about? It's not a very easy question, but one thing I'd like to point out is the other aspect that I've seen here is how much private sector is involved in education, how much of it is handled by the private sector. There are so many universities, so many schools from kindergarten to different levels that are actually private owned. And when I was in Zambia, I was very very impressed by the emerging of all these private institutions. But of course, we're not there yet, but it's a very, very good sign. The Open University, I think it's a very good story. And I think if we went ahead with such kind of, those progress in those areas, I think that would be a very good thing for the country. Of course, there are issues of whether they can keep the standards or whether they'll be able to deliver the goods. But I think it's a better option. It's better than not having them at all. And because we can work with it, with the government coming in, we can make use of these institutions and try to make them better and come up with ways of making sure that the standards in these institutions are improved. And now, you cannot talk about curriculum development or upgrading the standards of education without talking about teacher training. That's vital. And then if you have if the standard of the teachers is below par, then of course you not expect to have good students. So the most important area that needs to be looked into is improving the teacher training, providing, and if people can come in, like there are many educators out in the diaspora, there are many people that have great ideas. If we could come up with ways of going in to develop the teacher training curriculum in the first place, because we cannot talk about training the developing the curriculum for the children without the teachers being trained first, so we can put our heads together and go find ways, and we can work with both government and private institutions to improve the teacher training. We can see how much we can put into teacher training. I think the last time when back home, of us talked about the establishment of a virtual university. I'm not sure about how really that can work, but I think that would be a very good idea. And I think of a way in which
now with this IT and everything, so you don't have to be there in order to do what you want to do. So you can use the internet and go even form this institution, which is virtual, but recruit volunteers that want to participate in this and work with these institutions. I think as the time goes, as we discuss, the best way can be done, the best way can be found in, of doing this thing. And then from teacher training, then we can, the next question is how can we develop a curriculum? A lot of things have been said. One is whether the curriculum is good enough to meet, you know, the requirements of our time. If we, of course, you will not be comparing the curriculum with just the developed countries, but we can also look at how our curriculum compare with other developing countries. I mean, whether in the region or outside the region, so that would involve some research. And then, of course, we wouldn't just adopt or adapt whatever's happening, whatever is being done, but we want to sit down and look at how does that fit into our needs. And then curriculum development, and then development of education materials, because if you have developed curriculum and you don't have the materials to meet through which to deliver them, then you cannot do an effective job. And of course, and this trip will not necessarily need money, I think, at the beginning. And it's something that can actually get started with even tomorrow, you know, because what we need is a pool of ideas. And I would like to suggest that actually with all these ideas, if we could come up with some kind of a place within the framework where we can allow people to... have this idea. Like, I was very impressed with what Dr. Lukumonas and his group are doing, which is very practical. You go in and without fear, you try and find out what can work. Actually, of course, there'll be disappointment. Of course, sometimes things will not work out as you would expect. Things, as you try to do this, eventually come up in that way. So, if we could come up with a
I think, well, that's a very obviously detailed explanation, and thank you for that. And since you mentioned Dr. Lukumana, I know he's a nutritionist, so I would like to bring him in. Dr. Lukumana, what is your perspective on where do we start in reforming our educational system?
I thank God for this opportunity, and I believe that our...
Could you speak up, please, doctor?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
Hello?
You now.
Okay,
I can hear you now. Yes.
Yes, thank you very much for this opportunity. And I very much interested in educational things, because it's been our habit. So I believe that, first, picking up on your first point of training trainers, teachers must be trained before they even train, and also looking at the curriculum. Because my first question would be, in Zambia there is lots of private provision for education. Now for us to enhance the skills of the nation, what would you want us to see different in the nation? So I think that's the first question we have to ask ourselves, and the reason for that. Does the current education system really produce people who can hands-on and do things and so forth what they've done in a short space of time? We want to produce people who are workers, because the national curriculum is there to produce workers. Now, from the private sector, we want also workers, or we want to contribute and start producing innovators in business. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
minor observation is the experience that I've obtained in the UK as well, where I lectured. I've discovered that there are components in the education system here that are dedicated to innovation. And when people graduate, their mindset is an innovative mindset. Although not everything they do accept. I'm looking at Zambia, where we are now, our education system, the skills. What sort of skills would we want us to see put in the people so that they can quickly turn around the mission and have a bigger output? So that's the question I'd like to pose at that point, first of all.
Okay, thank you for that. I'd like to acknowledge Roger Charlie from the Ghana Block Talk Radio. Roger, do you have any questions, comments on what Simon Sakala has said and what Dr. Lukomona has said?
Yes, thank you, Chasaya. I wanted just to follow up on Mr. Sakala, where you said his grade 2 kids and grade 3 children, what they are learning. I just wanted to find out if he thinks it is really because of Japan's financial muscle, or some of the things they learn, even without money, some of those things can be applied back home in Zambia. For instance, when I was in the U.S., the kids in grade 1 or grade 2, they took a visit to the U.S. Congress. While they're learning about physics in the U.S. Congress, they also went to the U.S. Congress. In our situation, we can talk about Parliament. I have never been in Parliament. I've never been to State House, but I've heard about it. So I don't know if these things require money or not, but I just wanted to hear what Mr. Sagar has to say about that.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's very true. Yeah, that there are some things, like you mentioned, going to Congress, it's very practical, and you don't need that much money apart from getting the children to go there. In Japan here, it's very much the same. You know, they start in very small ways, like in the first grade. They're given some practical assignments, like the first holiday, they are given a plant. It's the morning glory to take home during the holidays, which they plant and water, and they do observations, and they take pictures, and they write something about that. And as they go up, they're given, they call it a free assignment where every child can make whatever they like. So there's free, free experimentation, where they can pick on any subject and do some research and write a report. And you're talking about this first, second graders, third graders. And apart from that, they have even what they learn, they already start applying, like even the mathematics, the rest of it they learn, they just don't learn the numbers. Already at that level, they are given situations in which they have to read a situation and then come up with the equation and solve. And these are very simple equations. And they also have a lot of visits to outside the school, which are part of the curriculum, and they have programs during the holidays, which are voluntary, and it's not every child that has to go there. So there are all sorts of things that are included in the curriculum which help children to learn more about their society. And also they also have given voluntary work to clean up in the community, where they go out and pick trash from the streets. Things like that, which I think instill some sense of responsibility and truth.
Okay, thank you for that response, Simon. At this point, I want to acknowledge somebody who's been very passionate in promoting Zambia to the outside world. He's actually done it, he's doing it, and so I'd like to get a perspective on how do we promote our culture to the outside world. And essentially, what are some of the challenges that are being faced? So, Patrick Mapalo, can you come in at this point? And how are you, by the way?
Well, I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you this morning? I don't know where you are right now.
Oh, I'm actually in London, Ontario. Just after Lima.
Oh, okay. That's good. You know, it's wonderful to follow the debate and these wonderful contributions. I wanted to pose a question of, I don't know how everyone thinks of trying to help our country. I personally think the way we think is literally related to our languages. And I've seen that countries that have actually developed very well, including Japan, China, Scandinavian countries, France, they learn the subjects, say chemistry, biology, and all these subjects in their native languages. And pretty much they do very well. And I'll give an example of myself. I was at Kasama Boys Secondary School. We had a very wonderful teacher, Mr. Sulimba. He was from Isoka. And this man taught us mathematics in Bemba. And this was in grade 12. And I'm telling you, nobody fell his class. And I've always wondered, you know, from that moment, I've always said, you know, there's something that has to be done with our our education system. I'll never forget that, Mr. Sulimba. And in fact, when I go to, every time I try to go, I want to get in touch with this man, because he was our deputy head chief at our school. And, you know, I don't know what everybody thinks about our learning process. And I think so many Zambians are very intelligent. I have my own cousin who went to German, studied German for 1 year, and started learning engineering in German, and he graduated with honors. And he's just one of the examples, and there are so many Zambian students who have done that. So I don't know what others think about that.
Can I come in?
Patrick, I know you posed an educational question, but what I wanted to focus on, especially you have got expertise in taking tourists from America to the outside world, what are some of the challenges that you have faced? And in going forward, what do you think should be done?
I think what right now I'm working with a lady that the government has given us some land just off Lusaka. Very good. 110 hectares of land, and one of the things that we propose to do is to build a school there. And like Roger said, one of the things that we actually want to do is to take these students to Parliament, let them see their MPs, members of Parliament, begin to debate, and when we do that, come back, if go in compounds like, you know, Kalingalinga and Mandevu, go there, sit down with the white chairman, ask the problems that they're facing, and allow these children to begin to solve problems within their community. And I think that's one of the things that I think, as I've gone to Zambia many times, it is completely lacking. I don't think the question is money. I really object to that, because I think it's when we take responsibility of what we have, because money might not just be the solution that we might be looking at. So I think when we ourselves begin to take responsibility of what we can do, then you don't need money to go to State House, or of course, you know, students have to donate in a little bit of money here and there. But it's not something that the government should actually be able to fund a project going to, you know, State House or going to Parliament. I think when schools begin to do that, then the government would realize that actually these people are now taking responsibility of the destination of the country. That's one of the major challenges that I've seen. My mother was a teacher. I've got two. My elder sister, she's a head teacher, and one of my sisters. So the teaching is really part of my own nucleus family. So.
Okay. Mwata Chisha, you've talked passionately about our culture. And quite interesting that even as Zambians, we are still struggling to find who we are and as a people. But also, what we haven't done very well is market ourselves, our culture, as a tourism asset. Right now, the way tourism has been marketed is Victoria Falls and the park. There's been no idea at all to focus on the people themselves, who obviously have insights to an extent where you can actually define what would be relevant in this plaza. Can you shed light on that?
Well, the first thing we need to realize that we are contributing to the slow death of our culture. So, in commercialization is one of the aspects that our culture is being killed by. So, what probably we need to do before I get into it, but can I ask why do we still call it the Victoria Falls when we have a traditional name, a Zambian name, a native name, an indigenous name of Mosio Tunya, which actually means the smoke that thunders? Why do we keep on hanging to those foreign names? Those are some of the things that I don't have, you know, too much long hair, but those are the things that I would be, you know, making me pull my hair. So what we need probably to do is identify those things that do not have direct roots to the indigenous belief system and the things that people hold dear. Let's identify those landmarks and things that we can package together and sell to the tourists, and then we can also protect some of the fundamental things like
Hello,
can you hear me?
Yes.
So we need to categorize some of the things that we can commercialize and things that we do not have to commercialize. Let's look at the Kuomboka. The Kuomboka doesn't have, you know, any you know, thing rooty to the people. It only, you know, signifies the movement of the people from a inundated land to a drier land. And it's a ceremonial thing. You know, we can bring in a lot of tourists and show them, oh, this is how it is done. It's colorful, and we can make money off of it. But when we are talking about the preparation of the body of the chief, we cannot allow other people to come in there and start looking at how that is done. I mentioned in our discussion that I was perturbed one time when I was listening to public radio here, and I heard a lady, an American lady, that was mischaracterizing or misrepresenting the process. And in fact, she went to the extent of saying, "We do eat people because we're cannibalists, because this is what we do. We eat the body or some parts of the body of the chief." And I said, absolutely not. That is incorrect, inaccurate, and it should be discredited right here and then. What she was talking about was the embalming process of the body of the chief. And those things should not be let out. When Kapweko was writing one of his books, Shalapochani Chandala, he said, do not translate this into another language. He specifically says the language of a foreigner. He meant that these words should not be misconstrued. If you want to understand what is in it, you want to learn the language. And I think those people who have talked about the language a little earlier, you know, hit the nail on the head. If we are going to progress and we're going to maintain our identity, we need to maintain our languages. It does not matter whether we are speaking Lamba, we are speaking Kaonde, we are speaking Tonga, Lozi. The things that are fundamental to the Lozi people, those that sustain the roots of the Lozi people, those have to be protected from the eye of a potential person who is going to want to commercialize it or want to make a quick buck on it. We need to have something that we keep other people out of. I mentioned also that there was a Lakota person in South Dakota who was approached by a cameraman and a news reporter. They are trying to ask how they conduct the sweat lodge, for instance. How is this conducted? What is involved? Are there spirits involved and stuff like that? And he wanted to correct that perspective, and before he did that, he apologized to his fellow elders. The reason was that because he didn't want to have his words, and he could not prevent that, but he didn't want his words to be misconstrued, to be misinterpreted. But by virtue of him attempting to explain, he could not prevent those outsiders from misconstruing the words or the meaning of the words. So the same thing applies to us, but it seems to us that, to me, that in Zambia we are letting everybody into our bedroom, and as long as they say we can put it on camera and we'll give you 5 penny, then it will be, you know, open wide doors and people would be flocking in. That's not the way it's supposed to be, because the next thing we know, people are putting the body of the chief on camera and reading it on Animal Planet, you know, for oral care. So we need to protect some of the basics of our culture.
Okay, let me maybe just follow up while Josiah connects back on what you have said. Our children, to some of us who are living here in diaspora, most of them cannot even utter a word in our language. My first question is, whose fault is that? And if that is our own fault, what do you think we should do as we rediscover our identity in the diaspora?
Is that question to me?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Before I came to the United States, I was working in the government. Okay, there was a guy who came here. He married a Tanzanian, and they came here and had a baby. After 4 years, they returned home, and this baby could speak. He was born here. He could speak Swahili like no man's business. The parents were speaking Swahili to him, and he learned very well. You know, that is notwithstanding the fact that the kid also attended kindergarten here, and he learned how to speak English. He could speak English and he could speak Swahili. So I think it is our responsibility as parents to teach our children our languages. Now, there will be a conundrum when you have you came here as a young man, and you came here and you met over here, and then you had children over here. That, you know, the children will have a problem because most of the time you're not at home, or most of the time they're at school and you only have maybe 3-4 hours of the day together. How are they going to learn the language? So maybe an effort has to be made to connect our children back to our roots. You know, can we have a place where they would meet with their cousins or their nieces and their uncles, where they could learn the language? A friend of mine in San Francisco last summer, you know, took his son to Zambia. We were traveling around the country with him, and he learned a few words here and there, but that did not cut it up, because I mean, he needed an immersion where he spends time there. Why don't we just drop our kids there and let them lose themselves into our languages and learn the language? It's our responsibility as parents to teach our children our language, and I don't think it's something that we can pass it on to anybody else.
Okay, sounds good. Let me first recognize someone who is calling in on line 5, Sky. Good afternoon or good morning. Okay, that's fine. Patrick, the gentleman who has just spoken brings in a very interesting aspect of us even creating some daycares where only Bemba can be spoken there, here in diaspora. How do you check that?
Come again, I didn't hear the question.
The question is whether us in the diaspora could be more proactive, start creating centers where maybe we can just go and leave our children for 1 hour or 2 hours, and the only thing they are going to hear is Bemba Onyanja in that daycare.
Wow. First of all, I think you have to have the population big enough that would be able to do that. I'll give my an example of where I am right now in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We are just two Zambians here. So to create such a center, I think you first of all, you have to think of the population-wise. I know in Dallas, they have something like that, where they actually leave these children with maybe a mother who is not working, and then they drop their children at such a house, and then the children there begin to interact. But the most important thing is to teach these things at home, teach the tribe, you know, tribal languages at home. I know friends of mine who actually has a policy that the children at home speak either Nyanja or Bemba at home, and when they are at school, then they can use their English. My son, David, he grew up here, and I mean, so he doesn't have friends out there that can speak to him in either of some native languages, but I make it a point as a father at home, I teach him my native language, which is Bemba, and he knows, he can understand. So I think if those tribal languages can be taught from a home setup, it would bear much more fruit. The center, it has to do with population ratios.
Okay.
Mr. Tamar,
okay.
Can I make a follow-up?
Please
and this is Sakala Japan. Can I comment?
Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Well, language, I think that issue can become a big complication. Like for us here, you know, I'm Sakala. I'm from the East. My wife is Tonga. My Tonga is very limited. And my children learn Japanese. They're all their friends are Japanese, so the Japanese is very good. And so the question is, how do we handle this thing? So we actually just gave up because we thought they need to learn their English as well anyway. So we decided to teach them English, and we used our mother tongue, something wise, for them to just make them familiar. So in our context, it's a very difficult thing. But I think apart from language, it's good to emphasize the other values. I plan when I have time to take them home to go to school in Zambia and get immersed and play like my son did when my daughter, when they were younger, they went. And but I think more than that, we try to get them be aware of where they come from, and we show them the pictures of their cousins and the kind of relationship that existed that they don't see here, and you know how big families are, and other. So we with that kind of situation, I think the language aspect becomes a very complicated issue.
Roger, can I say something?
Yes, go ahead.
You know, this is where it comes. This the whole thing we're talking about now starts from home. I remember one time Professor Mubanga Kashoki had suggested something, and it actually brought in a lot of controversy. And he said, he's a professor of linguistics, and he said he thought that if Zambia decided to choose at least speak two languages, say the most spokenly, widely spoken, Bemba and Nyanja, to be taught in school,
you know, among the 73 dialects that we have, and begin to develop this. Well, and I'm saying this because I know China has over 1,000 dialects, just China alone. But they've chosen and they've picked two as their national dialects, languages that they actually teach. And if we do the same, even, say, in Zambia, it would, you know, it would help us a lot. But we have a situation going on, and it's very plain and simple. If we decided to say we choose Bemba or Nyanja, then of course the Lozi will cry out, the Tongas will cry out, the, you know, and other tribes will begin to cry out, why leaving us? Why not our language? Why not? But I think if we have a nation at heart, as our interest, would begin to realize and say, you know, let's put our national issues as the foremost important thing than just our small, it's not small. If we just leave our languages, I mean, we can learn these languages aside, but we can choose these two languages. Whatever language, it might not be Bemba or it might not be Nyanja, but whatever language we can choose as a country and pick from there. And I think that's where it begins. I think it's everything, whatever we're talking about, goes back, really back home. So China has over 1,000 dialects, but China has picked two. So, and I don't know about Japan, but definitely I know about China, so I can confidently say about China. But I think if we decided to pick those two languages, and that, I mean, any language in Zambia, it might not be Bemba, but if we decided to do that, German, I think they could have many other dialects there as well, but I don't know. I haven't done any studies about European countries, so I cannot confidently say anything.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, at this point I'd like to first of all apologize. Technology is technology. I don't know what happened, but I'm back. And to continue the show, I would like to acknowledge. Not applied in a way that it should be by politicians. And so I would like to bring Geshem and give us a perspective on why you think policy is key to cultural change in Zambia.
I beg your pardon, Tafaya?
I would like you to talk about why you think policy change or implementation by politicians is key to changing how we look at ourselves as Zambians and also how we promote the country and cultural goods going forward.
My view is there's a lot of echo on the
feedback.
There's a lot of feedback here, yeah. But in terms of policy, what I think is that our government has not done a lot in terms of culture. What the government needs to do is set up a minister of culture, if they can. You know, the minister of information. The minister of information should be transformed from what it is now to promoting culture. You know. You excuse me, Chasaya, there's a lot of echo, so I can't concentrate on what you're saying.
That's fine. We're now running towards the end of the this segment of the show, but what I want to emphasize for listeners out there is that the discussion is still going on. You should actually get to join the conference by going to the Zambia Diaspora Connect website, which is zambiaconnect.org, and the instructions on how you join the groups and become a part of the conference. And again, it's really about what we can do for our country, what we think we can do for our country, and more importantly, on the other end, what we feel as government, the Zambian people themselves, private sector, can change so that we arrive at one meeting point. And so join the group, be part of the discussion, be part of ideas generation, because really it's from us speaking together that we can find common ground. I would like to point out at this stage for all our panelists that yesterday I was encouraged by the fact that there's a Zambian dance troupe called Pamozi Dance Troupe that came out first at the Pan-African Festival in Algeria. And so as a result of that, they've won a trip to the U.S. in Chicago. So all of you in Chicago, I think it's good that we support these people. But more importantly, we have to ensure that they keep coming year in, year out, because it's the only way that we can get our country moving forward in terms of cultural promotion and tourism promotion. As a last question to my panelists, and I'll start with Mwata. Are you still with us, Mwata?
Yes, I am.
Yes. Going forward, what do you think is the role of the diaspora in this equation? And I want you to be brief.
What I can say is that we need to address some of the concerns that we just identified within ourselves. Take responsibility for maintaining our language, and do not commercialize our culture. You know, get back to the roots, connect to the roots, and fortify the roots. And you know, put Zambia first, and continue working on the projects that are coming up.
Okay, Simon Sakala in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. Your question again? What we need to do
my
now?
My question again is, going forward, what do you think is the role of the diaspora in this equation?
Yeah, I think what we need to do now is come up with some action plans immediately. There's a lot that's come up, so I think the next step forward is to say, okay, this is what can be done tomorrow, and this is what can be done the day after, and we're going to be on this group, and who, for example, can take responsibility, I'll do this, and this is what we can do tomorrow, and this is my plan, and this is what you should take, and this is how many people need to, and this is to help, and this is how much time will be required, and things like that, and then we get going. Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Lukamona, if you're still with us. Okay, Patrick Mapalo. Okay, I guess we've lost our callers.
No, he's still there. I think he was.
Oh, he's still there. Okay. What about Mr. Charlie?
For me, actually, I've always said to my friends, the numbers we have in the diaspora, it is, I think, high time we said we can deliver something back home. For instance, I just gave an example to my friend yesterday. I was talking to the phone. Shida Yumfwa, but in Delanda, as an individual, I bought books. I've delivered to my school, 20 boxes of them. If each one of us can take up this challenge, grade 2, grade 3 books, some of us have challenges even constructing sentences up to today because of our development when we were growing up in Kitwe Mindoro. And I don't want other kids to go through that. So I think diaspora has to be very, very practical. There are very small things we can do in Zambia, not in 2015, even beginning 2019. We can begin our small schools to deliver there.
Thank you very much. Musaba Chailunga?
Yes, you see, it's very important that we all find ways and means to contribute, especially when it comes to culture and education. I was lucky enough I think a month ago, we have attended the Education Reform Conference, and like a lot of people are saying, there's a lot of opportunities, and the things that we know, the things that we took for granted, for example, when we're in Zambia, we know now that we can actually help in adding value to a lot of things. Language is key. I know language keeps coming up. Language is very important when it comes to development issues and culture. So it's not really very difficult to bring out culture, because that's just how we are. It's not something we have to make up. We just have to bring it out, to bring it to the forefront of everything that we are doing, and I think that will be able to help a lot.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, listeners, as you all are aware, there's the e-conference going on, but more importantly, we want you to be part of the voice that moves our country forward. And today we obviously talked about what has been some of the highlights of the e-conference during the week, brought those out, and one of the main things that we did was, first of all, highlight the problems. So we'll be moving to the next segment next week, which is the Skills Identity Group, and I can speak for the Doing Business in Zambia group as well, that we would like to focus on solutions or any ideas that you feel might help the country forward. A lot of us are asking the question, how do we contribute? How do we make this thing happen? And we're all at different levels financially, but what unites us is our burden to lift our country out of where it is now. So some of our friends are already doing something, and all of us should start something in a small way. I think one of the things that comes to mind for people is the feeling that you must have lots of money to contribute, but really it's small steps, and even with a conference, no idea is too small, no idea is too big. It's really for ourselves, and for those in the diaspora, we now have children who are coming up. I mean, how do we impart to them a heritage which they'll be proud of, but a heritage where they can proudly say, my father comes from Zambia, my mother comes from Zambia, I want to go to Zambia and see where my father comes from. And if they become influential leaders or whatever positions they may have, they feel that connection to an extent where they can also contribute to our country. And so, to an extent, development continues. This has been the Skills and Identity segment of the e-conference. And as I said before, we're very grateful to Zambia Block Talk Radio really for this partnership. And we hope that this working relationship will continue even with other organizations for the greater good of our nation. And at this point, I'd like to hand over to my lovely colleague, Mr. Roger Charlie in Alberta, Canada. So yours, Roger.
Thank you, Sasaya, for a lovely presentation. And we still have an hour to go to deal with. We organized our presentation today in a different way, and it has come out as very, very good in another form. This is going now to be an open discussion. Everything which has been discussed still burning in your head. You still want to, bring out something which has been missed out of the questions. You are free to come in. I would try to direct the discussion in one small direction, but you are free to bring in any item to the floor. First, I have two callers who are calling from Skype. One caller has, I just don't know, they have not answered, but let me recognize someone who is calling from Skype. Good morning or good afternoon.
Roger, sometimes my line is misidentified as Skype, but it's not.
Okay, and who is this again? Mwata, right?
Yeah, this is Mwata.
Okay. I have another caller. I have three callers who are showing Skype. Okay. Cletus, let's go back to doing business in Zambia.
Oh, Roger, I'm not a businessman, man. I'm tired of business. Can we do something else? All right, let's go back to doing business in Zambia. Mr. Chairman and...
let me ask a question before you you do. The finance minister in his budget has introduced something because of too much garbage in Zambia and trash.
Yeah.
He has, I think, dropped duty on the importation of trash vehicles to collect trash. My question is, if the government has realized that there is this problem and we have a problem of unemployment, instead of improving small businesses, why does the government introduce a sweeping measure on importation of all capital equipment which will allow creation of business in Zambia, instead of just coming up every day with one item in the budget? Why don't we just a sweeping measure, all capital equipment will be exempt from import tariffs?
Roger, I happen to have the chance to speak to the man who is involved with the customs duty, the commissioner, Mr. Myangwa, at the Zambia Revenue Authority last week. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
There's some disturbing noise.
We can't hear that in the system, so you are
okay. All right. And, you know, I asked him, you know, how these people set priorities, because the Revenue Authority and the Ministry of Finance and Cabinet Office have to sit together, you see, to see which direction all the planners in the Ministry of Finance and, you know, the people who, you know, write the tax laws have to sit together. And then he told me that, in his own words, that, you know, they implement tax as they see viable, you know. And I haven't studied the budget. I haven't had time to read through the budget that the minister presented. But as you put it, there's a lot of priorities that are misplaced in the way we do things in Zambia.
Mm-hmm. Musawa, please help us again on the same issue. We are sending a lot of items in Zambia in small quantities. If you like, a computer here, a small machine there. But the diaspora are being frustrated by our own government. How should we tackle this problem?
You see, you have to be we have to be very careful. There has to be a balance, right? There has to be a balance in everything that's being done. And it's very dangerous to actually criticize every position that government takes. It's not very wise to open everything to be duty free, even if it's capital equipment. And this is why the government, we are still struggling with creation of employment, right? There are certain things, certain tools that can be manufactured in Zambia, and the most important aspect is that we should be looking at ways, especially us in the diaspora, of trying to manufacture things in Zambia, especially simple tools, not necessarily just bringing them in. You'll be surprised that as much as you think it's a good thing to send 5 computers to Zambia, as an example, you are probably killing 8 jobs. You know, I know Zambia, we don't manufacture computers, but that's just an example I'm using. So you have to look at things step by step. Yesterday I was listening to
Dambisa Moyo.
Dambisa Moyo. Sorry, I can't believe the name just disappeared. I was listening to Dambisa Moyo, who was saying that, look, there are people in the West who organize people to send mosquito nets into Africa to help
poor people. But is that a bad thing? No. But there's a side effect to that. There are a lot of African people, including African women, who have jobs making mosquito nets, right? So if you send all these free mosquito nets into Africa, now the same people you are trying to help are out of work. And that's why we have to have a balance and look at every issue critically, one by one.
Let me come in, sorry.
Go ahead.
On that same note, I would like to just expand it into the same mosquito issue. I think we haven't just expanded the horizon. Do you know that the same mosquito net is the one that here in the West is being used as a decorative thing? If you go to these halls, the wedding halls, you see the same mosquito net, the one they drip down and put a light, like those lights for the Christmas tree. They don't use the green one, they will use the white one as a decorative measure. So maybe if we expand into that, the poor women in Zambia can know there's always weddings there, even weddings on Fridays now. I know Mom attended one yesterday. So if you can expand it that way, and then you can also try to net these that are coming in free. But just an idea for, you don't use a mosquito net for mosquito net only. There's other reasons why they use the mosquito net. And once that happens, that's why Uber is expensive in terms. When they start realizing that you can carry minimum is a business aspect thing, then the Uber all of a sudden becomes
an ambulance.
Almost a vehicle, and it's becoming an ambulance. It's as a tire of a motor vehicle. All the used tires can be used to that. So let's also expand the horizon of this mosquito net.
Okay, let me go to Mr. Tembo. Are you still with us in Japan?
Oh, you mean Simon?
Simon.
No, he's off. He's gone to sleep.
Okay, yeah, we understand. Mwata, doing business again in Zambia, and we are talking about the question of taxes. Maybe let me approach it in this angle. What do you think is our biggest problem as a diaspora, as we want to do business in Zambia?
Well, number one is just that. It's taxes. Oh, no. I have tried to import some stuff myself, and the taxes are forbidding, and then there are conditions beyond taxes. Say, for instance, the term, the period within which you have to pay the taxes, it's forbidding. You know, for the government to expect that you are going to import a horse, let's say, for instance, an ERF or a Volvo, and you're paying, say, $14,000 to $17,000, and for government to expect you to raise another $5,000 at the border so that you can get the vehicle inside Zambia, I think it is just ridiculous. Mm. Okay, I understand where Mr. Chailunga was saying that there are some, you know, side effects on both sides of the equation. I understand that, but then there are things like that shouldn't be happening. Like, let me take the vehicle in, let me raise the funds while the vehicle is at home. It's not going to be licensed, it's not going to be insured because it's not cleared by the authorities. But you are going to find that the government is going to impound the vehicle, put it at the border at the risk of it being vandalized, it being, you know, sometimes even be stolen. You never know, it could be stolen. And then they will start scaring you. They say, within 2 weeks if you don't bring it, we're going to auction it. Why are we being so mean to ourselves when we are just trying to help ourselves?
Mm.
Give me time to take this thing home. Let me sleep, you know, peacefully at home, knowing that it's safe with me, and then I can raise the funds and then pay the government. The government should make sure that I don't register it if I don't pay. You see, those are some of the simple things that we can do. The other thing is regarding the mosquito nets and stuff like that. What we have done is acquiesced to the mentality of the colonialists who moved us from our ways, our indigenous ways, to the modern ways, but did not equip us to be functional in the modern ways. We are finding out that, you know, people who used to be hunter and gatherers now are subservient to the corporate boss. And now they don't know how to operate in there. They don't know how to create employment. They don't know how to create jobs. They don't know how to make tools. First, the technology is elusive to them. Now we are expecting them to organize themselves and begin to make all these things, and we begin to have a thought of protecting the environment so that they can thrive. But what we are forgetting is we do not have them organized. They are not equipped. They are not functional. How are they going to take advantage of the environment that we are creating? So the government, again, needs to step in and organize these people. Find people like Mr. Chailunga, Mr. Sakala, Mr. Tembo. You know, bring all these people together and say, you guys, create an environment in which these people that don't have the wherewithal to create these products that we are going to enact a law, you know, to protect. You see, some of these things need to be looked at in totality, just not one side. Okay, we're going to come up with a budget that says this and this and this, but let the people think through it and figure out how they're going to take advantage of it. I think
hello.
That's
yes. Someone saying hello?
Yes.
Yes, please. Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Alfred Mitty again from Newcastle upon Tyne, UK.
Okay, Mr. How are you, Doctor? Are you Doctor Mitty?
No. This
oh,
yeah,
Mr. Mitty.
Mr. Mitty.
Okay. How are you?
I'm very fine. How are you?
Have you been following our discussion?
Unfortunately, I could not follow the discussion from the start because I had some personal commitments. So I just logged on when one of the colleagues just was explaining himself about different issues. So.
Yes, actually, we are dealing with the question
relating to my presentation, and then I'll just make a comment on what I've just heard from a colleague who just finished presenting a few minutes ago.
Okay, we are dealing with the question of doing business in Zambia and taxes, and he gave an example where he takes a truck, and the government wants to charge him massive amounts of money. They want that money within a week. This question is very personal to me. I have staff right now laying at Lusaka International Airport. The government is asking me to pay more than I had paid for those goods.
Exactly.
Mm.
Roger. Yeah, I think my my contribution over that, you know, if you followed our blog conversation with colleagues around the world, my main concern is that I think many individuals in the diaspora will take advantage of our positions wherever we are, and you know, like example of taking a truck to Zambia, I don't think those are developmental issues, because we have many Zambians back home who have actually doing business in Zambia for a long time, and they are involved in these businesses. In my understanding, those of us in the diaspora, with our experiences around the world, we should come up with novel ideas, not ideas that are being already exploited by our fellow Zambians. And I'm sure many Zambians listening to our conversation, they'll go like, but what new things are you going to bring? It's not about us attacking the government on taxation. We are in the diaspora, and I think we should be in a position to pay the amount the government can ask us in terms of whatever we want to bring down there. Now, those of us in the diaspora, are we adding any value to Zambia by taking trucks, by taking,
yes,
you know,
Mercedes
Benzes? For me, I do not think we are adding value. We will add value by whatever, you know, I've been following colleagues around the world talking about how we can improve our education system, how we can improve our industrial system. I mean, I've been contributing effectively on, you know, on the biotechnology systems in Zambia. Those are novel ideas, and I'm sure many of our colleagues back home will say, yes, I think Mr. Mitty went abroad, he has studied many years, and he's trying his best to bring his ideas back home. Not bring vehicles, not bring those things. Those things are...
Roger, may I say something, please? No, hold on, let him finish.
So, for me, as I said, I think we should be talking of tangible ideas. That, okay, we have five electrical engineers who would want to come up with a project of electrifying Shangombok. And we have got five biotechnologists and chemical engineers like myself who would want to develop biofuels that can make other farmers, grow other, value-added products that can have an income to that. Those are the people from diaspora. But if diaspora people, we start arguing why Mr. Stumbeko, the finance minister, has not put a clause there that a Zambian in UK or a Zambian in the United States should bring 20 trucks and they should be duty-free. That is not adding value to our country. We are actually trying to exploit our own country.
Okay.
So why don't we bring good ideas
Dr. Mitty,
to
Mr. Mitty.
And to move on from there?
Mr. Mitty, your point is well taken. Before I bring in Cletus, let me give you a small scenario. A person taking a truck to Zambia may not have $50,000 to buy equipment to process fruit, but he thinks if he can take a truck and sell it, buy another one and sell it, he may move a step further and buy equipment to process fruit.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, sorry. Can I just add on that?
Yeah, just briefly. Just briefly, and then I'll let Cletus come in.
Right. Before Cletus come in, can I just comment on that?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Right. You see, those of us in the diaspora, many of our colleagues back home in Zambia, we are taken as people who are well-informed, and people who have been exposed to societies that are quite developed. And when we are talking about projects, one, it's not you take a truck today, and then you sell it again. You buy another two trucks or buy other. That is, it's not different from what many our fellow Zambians are doing back home. But when we have a conference like this one, interacting with we are involving intellectuals around the world outside Zambia. People should come up with serious business proposals. There are so many international organizations, not only in Zambia, who accept certain proposals and fund those projects. Now, if we do not come up with serious business proposals, then you are going to talk about the government going, it's like cutting corners. No, there are no corners. If we have a tangible idea, put it forward, the international organization, we can recognize it. We've got Development Bank of Africa or Development Bank of Zambia who can actually, sponsor this project. So there are so many, in my understanding, other venues. So concentrating on all these minor issues, the government, to me, I think in this conference, what has slightly disappointed me is the diaspora concentrating on the weaknesses of the government. To me, I think that is not the essence of us. We are not politicians. We are intellectuals in our own field, and we should actually direct our government on how they should spend their money.
Okay,
and
thank you so much.
Their money.
Thank you so much for your passionate contribution. Let me let Cletus come in.
Okay, thank you very much.
Keep our contributions brief. That's
yes,
where we
sir.
Allow as many people as possible. We have one or two questions to deal with.
Sure. First of all, I guess Mr. Mitty missed the first segment where we had Mr. Msonda. Mr. Msonda is the chairman of the trade fair, and he told us that he agreed with us when we told him that Zambia is not, lacking intellectual input. There are a lot of learned people in Zambia. There are a lot of learned people all over. There are a lot of papers that have been presented. All this the paperwork of documents, researches, and reports and projects have been made in bulk in Zambia. If it is into a lot of these libraries, you go to the Central Statistics Office, you're going to find piles and piles and piles of things that have been written and recommended projects that have been proposed, and they have just been lying there in Zambia. So we can say that we have bright ideas, we in the diaspora, and I tell you this, the practicality is what is needed in Zambia. If somebody sends trucks to Zambia,
yeah.
He doesn't have to be punished. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Cletus.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be punished, and you can't call that a trivial project, because somebody has to start from somewhere. We identified already that there's getting credit in Zambia is not an easy thing, you know. So if somebody starts with sending, computers and stuff, you don't call that minor, because that person is doing something. He's probably got a bigger project in the office. And then I'd like to answer what Amsawa talked about Dambisa. If you read Dambisa's books, like the one she talked about, AIDS, Dambisa has got her own way of looking at things. She's a hardcore capitalist, you know. You can't say, you know, if you send free things to Africa, you are inhibiting people who are trying to sell the same things that they make. I'll tell him this. In Zambia, we used to assemble Land Rovers. They were still a luxury to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You could have a lot of Land Rovers, but people can't afford them. So if you are somebody who can bring this Land Rover trying to donate it to a cooperative in Zambia, would the cooperative in Zambia say no? You know, those points that Mr. makes are just very complex, and they are just theoretical. Thank you very much.
Mr. Moderator, can I come in for just a second here?
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I have the Bank of Zambia Governor report here, and he identifies priority sectors that the government has had on the books since 2008. I also looked at the United Nations report about transportation in the southern region. In Zambia, just Zambia alone, there are 400 trucks that are owned by Zambians. 400 trucks owned and operated by Zambians. Okay? The rest of the trucks that we see on our roads are actually owned by outsiders, outside of Zambia. Okay? So we are seeing South Africans, Angolans, and Mozambicans using our country. They are transporting. They have registered companies in Zambia. They will come in, you know, and use one of the Zambians as a figurehead. But again, when we look at that, somebody is taking advantage of our area. How do we participate in this industry, in the transportation industry? We need to step up, and we don't have credit in Zambia. How do we raise $50,000 to bring in a truck into Zambia and participate in the sharing of the monies in that sector? We don't have those funds, and we're coming from a background of poverty. Most of the Zambians that even, you know, some would think that because we are in diaspora, then we do have the cash. And most of our siblings do have that misconception that because we're in diaspora, then we are rolling in cash. We don't have that luxury. So when we begin to do that, like other commenters have said, we have some bigger projects that we are eyeing, and we are trying to raise cash so that we can begin to take advantage of some of these priority sectors that have been identified. One of the things that the governor has identified is floriculture, horticulture, processed foods, production and processing of tea and coffee, textile, manufacturing of copper and iron and steel and cobalt engineering products. We can't get into this from nowhere. And these people who you were mentioning, Mr. Miti, that can look at our papers and stuff like that, yes, they we give them a lot of papers, but how many do they choose out of that whole slew of papers that we submitted? Like last few months, I would say maybe four or five months or so, there were a lot of papers that were submitted by Zambians across the United States that I know for sure myself. I participated in one of them. To this day, we don't know exactly how many were funded. So we cannot wait on those guys to make up their mind so that we can begin to do something to feed our families. A lot of people are dependent on us. A lot of people are dying and they're dependent on us. So how do we raise funds to begin to work on those projects as well as feeding our families? You see?
Yes.
Let me allow Mr. Miti to respond to this. To everyone, what we have said, and maybe let me add a question to that. You would like us to be thinking intellectually, bring ideas. I just want you to put things intangible, things we can touch. I know you have this biotechnology issues you have raised, but bring something simpler which intellectuals here in diaspora should be dealing with rather than the small items we are talking about.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Moderator. No idea is actually small, but an idea can add value or can not add any value. I personally understand what my colleague, the previous presenter, mentioned. There are many things that we know we have to consider here. He mentioned about other people using our transport system or 400. He mentioned 400 trucks which are owned by other people. To me,
which are owned by Zambians.
Who are owned by Zambians. You see, for me, I look at this differently. We should look at the whole economy in totality. You know, we've got the supply problem. We've got, what I call the Pandora box. And the Pandora box, what I mean is, that's why we have agriculture, process industry, pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, chemical engineering, refining of our fuels in Andorra, and all those things. And then from there, all those things need to be distributed to customers. Now, if Zambians are concentrating on taking raw materials from one place to somewhere and distributing them from somewhere to another point, then to me it becomes a very big developmental issue. Now, I am trying to concentrate on us in the diaspora looking at what tangible things can we do in agriculture, in process industry, in pharmaceuticals, in biotechnology.
Very, very briefly, Mr. Minchi, to that very question you're asking, what other things? I just point to them and say, in these areas, A, B, C, D, for example, A, B, C, D. Then we move on to...
For example, I'll combine two things, or three things. For example, when we want to develop our industry of right now there is a fuel shortage in Zambia.
Okay.
And if we can improve on, processing our own biofuels, not only biodiesel, but also bioethanol, which can be made from maize, stover, for example, or growing of, jathropha, which is being done at the moment, Zambia just being a place where they are growing. Now, we do not have our own plant. Now, people like myself, I can design a plant. I can work in a place to produce biofuels that can be blended into the petroleum, and we have cheaper prices for the fuel in Zambia. Because of that...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Michi. Sorry to cut you, and I'll bring you back. Let me let Musaba come in.
Okay, thank you very much, Roger. I very much agree with what Mr. Meat is saying. And I think this is the problem that we have. In Zambia, most Zambians are traders. And to make it worse, they are most scale traders, right? So you can't have government targeting policy towards Zambians who are bringing in a single truck. The reason is that there are other people, the same people that you are saying they own more trucks in Zambia, they can actually buy 50 trucks. Say, for example, government says we take out duty from trucks. Musaba, I'll be able to afford one truck. Somebody else who's not Zambian will afford 50 trucks, and we bring them in. Government would have lost more money on the 50 trucks.
Let's not narrow this discussion to trucks. Let's now put them to capital equipment, please.
Now, yes, but you see, the idea here is that the capital equipment is the same thing. We cannot allow government already Lumwana, for example, already have concessions. I don't know how much tax they pay on the equipment they import. They import equipment worth millions. You can't allow that to be going in duty free. Right? So that's the point we are trying to make. Now, the other sectors that Mr. Meat is trying to explain here, which I agree with, is that we have to go into actual areas of development from agriculture to processing to manufacturing. And that should be our focus. I'm not saying people should not import trucks or computers. I'm not saying that. But don't complain about tax.
Yeah, exactly.
Roger.
we end here, and we are going to continue as we go on in the week with this question, either of taxes and everything. It should be included. We still think if Romana, the Chinese, have concessions, whatever they bring, why can't the diaspora have the same concessions? But that will go on as we discuss. My next question.
Roger.
Yes.
You can't end it. Hold on.
Yeah,
I have Mr. Michi, I think, brought on some very important points. And
are we able to be brief, gentlemen? That way we can move to another question.
Yes. I just want to appreciate Mr. Michi and his skills and his professional. What he has said, we have to consider everything that he has said and jot them down and see how we can follow up. Biochemical engineering is now becoming the in thing, and so we should actually think and see how we can pursue his ideas further.
Okay.
Thank
so
you.
That will go, Mr. Musaba, in the report, and I'm sure we want to think big, Mr. Michi. We want to think big, and we will. Mwata, brother Mwata, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, this is Roger Chadi from Calgary in Alberta.
Roger, let me come inside us here.
Let's go to the next question.
1 minute before you close up on that.
Are you sure? 1 minute?
Yes, I've been 1 minute.
Go ahead.
He showed me submit a good point, but I want to also, as we're moving on, to focus on, I think the government also is looking at exploiting whoever. When they see the potential here, that's where they put the taxes. The money is sitting in Zambia with people that put money in mattresses and stuff. That's the money that they should be able to tax. There is money circulating in Zambia that is not in banks and whatever. How are they making that money? That's where to tax. I still support it. Somebody brings something like a truck, whatever. That's innovation.
No.
Okay, gentlemen. Point well taken. Brother Mwata, next question.
Yes.
Let's go with it. Partnerships with local businesses in Zambia. I have a lot of brothers and siblings in Zambia, but we have been unable to take off. Each time you send money goes to Zambia, that money will never come back in its initial form.
You never know
form.
Where it's going.
How should the diaspora take up this challenge of creating partnerships with local businesses in Zambia?
Roger, you and I need to talk offline, you know? We have such similar experiences. All these things that you're talking about, I've been involved in. But anyway, but I still believe that we can salvage the situation. All right, we have been outside of our country, and we've seen how other how these countries operate, and how people are engaged and serious about business. But we still are lacking. Like I said, we've been moved from hunting and gathering, and we haven't been fully equipped to be functional in this white water world. What we need to do is to tough it out, okay? Identify those individuals that we think we can work with. One of the ideas that I was thinking myself was to bring somebody over here, keep them for a little while, and show them how the system operates. And then take them back and see how they would make things work. Otherwise, we would be putting money into it, and money would never come back. I've observed this over a period of 10 years now, and very little of it sticks, if it sticks at all.
Yeah. Can I make a comment?
Yes. Who is this again?
Mr. Michi.
Mr. Michi, go ahead. Just be brief. We have only about 20 minutes and...
I would urge all my fellow diasporans that we avoid placing our friends who are back home as maybe backwards if things are done in Zambia the way they are done. Either we blend in and change that way. If we are from the diaspora, we think we are so intelligent, that's why our friends who are listening at the moment might find it very difficult to work with us, because they think we don't, no, we think they are crap, and we know what how it's done. So the best way is to blend in, understand how things are done in our own way, because you cannot turn Zambia into United States, I cannot turn Zambia into United Kingdom. I can only participate in transforming gradually in how things should be done. So us, because this is a public forum, and when we are speaking, it's very hurtful, I think, for people listening at home to think, oh, no, maybe the way things are done, it's non-functional. You know, we should choose certain vocabulary very carefully, because, you know, it's actually unprogressive itself. We should choose the vocabulary that helps, that we understand where we are coming from, our system, our public, how they operate, but how do we embed in our knowledge into that system so that it develops, not coming from the top and saying, Zambian system is non-functional, so we need to bring people to the UK to show them how things are done, and then dump them back in Zambia to do that. Those of us in diaspora, that should not be our approach. When we approach things that way, people back home will be upset. And when we get back home, they will not give us the normal forum of us to express what things to be done. So we should calm down and also respect our people back home, that we have a system which is functional. Even if it's not very efficient, let's show them, or let's participate in how we can improve the efficiency of our system. That is my comment over that.
Let me come in, please.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity, Roger. Obviously, one sees a sense of passion about everybody. And I know that all of us have got different perspectives. One may be focused on a particular area, a particular concern. So my sense is that all of us are different levels of development, and we're all in different fields. So it doesn't really help us if we're going to focus on one issue and then expand it, because one of the things we have to be aware of as diasporians is that it's taken very long for us to reach a stage where people are actually listening to us, and we have to consider also that period of looking down at people back in Zambia only because we've been here is also what got us into problems like this, because we came from that culture, and I don't see what has changed to me, because some of us went back, or when we go back on holiday, we flash on. So you paint a different picture that you're obviously very rich. So what we need to do is acknowledge also on the diaspora side that all of us were different levels financially. Some are doing very well, others are not, but they are Zambian. And it doesn't help our cause to single out people. The diasporan cause is diasporan cause. Granted, all of our needs are very different. I think we have to find a balance between those people who are doing well and those who are not, but also find a way that accommodates everybody. It doesn't make anyone feel any less important or that their contribution is any less. That's all I have to say.
Titus. I didn't agree with that last statement.
Titus. Right. Yes. Please don't come in until I call on you. That way we don't have confusion.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you so much. I don't know, maybe my question was off. Mr. Mist, if you can promise to give me one minute only with this answer, I'll come back to you. My question is, I want to invest in Zambia, partner with someone, maybe my relative. I can't do it because I don't have confidence that money will bring back the return I'm promised.
Yeah.
Not to insult them. A lot of people have had that experience, especially with relatives, that experience. How do we build in confidence, Mr. Miti, that diaspora can begin to send money to their siblings, even to their local businesses, to be part of the Zambian economy in partnership?
Well, thank you very much for that question, Mr. Moderator. You know, it's a very huge question. In a brief answer, I'll say, if we, from the beginning, empower everybody, not only our, you know, if you come from, for example, I was brought up in Indola, I went to school in Indola, and, I'm from there. If I do not empower my own siblings, by empowerment is they go to school, they do the right thing, graduate from college, and if I'm able to send money to them, you'll be able to understand that this is for a capital project. Now, look at this. If I'm sending to my relative who is not employed, he has no job, and I'm sending money for me to buy cement because I've bought some small land somewhere and I'm building something. And this is what selfishness comes in. I'm building something for myself, and I'm sending money to somebody who doesn't even have a 25 kilogram millimeter in his house. What do I expect? Positive result? I should be stupid myself to actually to believe that that person will respond that way. But if that person had the 25 millimeter in his house, what happens is, if I send money to him, he's got the basic around him. So those basics cannot make him steal your two cement. Actually put some the same money into, buying your cement.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mitch. Thank you. I think I've taken your point.
The point.
Mr. Va, you're going to come in. Let me just acknowledge the gentleman calling 612.
That's Chizumba. Chipande.
Okay, he has disappeared. Go ahead, Amsam.
Yes, I just want to comment very quickly. I think to add on top of what Mr. Mitch has just said, when it comes to business, we've been warned, not just in Zambia, even here, they keep telling us if a relative or a friend comes to you to borrow money, right, especially relatives, either you just give them or you don't lend it to them, right?
Mm.
So the rules are the same. If you want to do something with your relative, you can't just say because they are a relative that they are paid.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know, if you want to give them a job, you give them a job and tell them if they misappropriate anything, they'll be fired. You know, and I think that's the way to go, because it's not fair to try to paint the picture that the siblings in Zambia are not helpful. When in the instance, probably it's us who are not helpful. That's
oh yes.
Okay, Musawa, continue with that thought. Why do you think, therefore, that diaspora has not very been active in finding partnerships, business partnerships in Zambia?
You see, the reason also is that there's a question of trust, right? We deal things. First of all, I describe myself without shame that I'm capitalist, right? The reason I do that is that people need to know that I'm not prepared to do anything for free, right? So the relationship between me and you when it comes to work, there has to be something for me out of it, which means that if you give me time to show up somewhere, I'll show up. But if I tell you that I'll be doing something, I'll be donating my time, sometimes you'll call me at 10 and I'm still sleeping, you see? So if we want us in the diaspora to find good partners or create partnerships, we should take emotion out of business. We can't be saying, oh, we are from the same province, he's my friend, we went to the same school. No. You put rules in place. If a rule is broken, the contract is broken.
Yeah.
Mr. Moderator, can I just make a quick comment?
Okay, Marta and then Cletus, we have 10 minutes before the end of the program. This is Zambia Block Talk Radio, every weekend on 9 hours Eastern Time, New York. We meet 2 p.m., those who are in UK, 3 p.m. in Zambia, and I think 12 a.m., those who are in Australia. Every Saturday, 9 o'clock. Please, Mr. Marta, you had a comment. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Mitty, I didn't mean to disrespect my my fellow Zambians at all. It's just that I was speaking from experience. And I think Mr. Stilliman, maybe Kreta said that we need to make sure that we take care of them. In all my operations, I have had people paid before I even claimed a penny. So those, and then we had rules also, Mr. Chailunga. We had rules also, but before the rules were discovered to have been broken, money had disappeared. Okay, so the thing is that I still have hope that we can work something out. I can influence some change in behavior. There is an expectation in our people that because I'm over here, I'm rolling in cash. And they say their friends.
No.
You see, they say that
no,
their friends.
No.
Things that I've heard them say. Their friends
no,
tell
no.
me that this is what they've heard. Now, I might have a very, very small circle of understanding, but then it's that's what I've gathered, and that's what I'm operating from. But
all right, can I just quickly make a comment on that?
Can you let him finish, please?
Yeah, I still have hope that we can still do something, and still something can work there. We come from there, I understand that, and we have changed. I cannot dismiss the fact that we haven't changed. I have changed, but the environment also has changed. It has become so corrupt that it's not the same way it was 22 years ago when I came over here. So there is a misunderstanding on both sides that this is what is obtaining.
Okay, Cletus, I think, wanted to come in.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead.
You know, we are just about to sum up. I think this C-Conference has been very successful. There's one comment that I wish to make, you know. First of all, Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Brown, when we asked about the practice of equity in taxes, we are not fighting government, you know, and we are not asking too much, you know. We know that government, you know, the government in Zambia is trying to do a lot of things, and, you know, they are under a lot of stress too, you know. But, you know, when we ask for equity in taxes, that's a very justifiable demand. People are talking about, you know, trucks is just an example. All imports in Zambia are very, very expensive. It's well over 70%, you know. So if you bought something for $100, you should prepare yourself to part away with $75 in taxes and duties and tax. You know, that's not equity,
yeah.
And I guess everybody realizes that. Then the second
yeah.
thought is that, you know, doing business, if you're in diaspora, you can't rely on friends and relatives. That's why we asked Mr. Chairman and everybody who participated that we need a vehicle, you know, a conveyor where, you know, an institution that can handle those things for people in diaspora. And Mr. Msonda helped us suggest that we need an office, you know, which will help us, you know, deliver. Thank you very much.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Mitchell, do you want to come in?
Of course. I know this is not, we have very limited time to actually, I wish we can sit down somewhere, you know, Bambaula or something, you know, we just speak all these things forever. How we can improve our Zambia. But anyway, to comment on what everybody has said, personally, I feel that...
Yeah, I mean, as we push, Mr. Mitty, sorry to cut you off, as you, in line of what you're going to say, what should be the role of government in trying to attract investment from diaspora? Go ahead with what you are saying. Let me not complain.
Yes, I think before I even go to all those specifics of this, I want to talk about government itself. Let's look at the composition of government. It's individuals who come from different kind of backgrounds in terms of their technical knowledge and everything. Their participation into making decisions is based on the pressure of concrete propositions. Now, those concrete propositions should be coming from us in the diaspora to direct our Zambian government. So listen, Honorable, Your Excellency, we have this project, and we have proved this, that it can work this way, and we need two trucks, for example, those who love trucks. We need tractors, those who love tractors. And to have this project work, we need this amount of money. So you guys, because they are not, we're not going to expect government to be doctors, to be engineers, to be scientists, to be everything. No, they rely on our knowledge. Now, those of us who are in the diaspora, let's not, you know, let's not trivialize our knowledge. And those people who are discussing, you know, smaller issues in my world will discuss why they have increased 20%. To me, to be honest, I read the budget of the minister. I'm not interested in whether it's 2% or it's 60%. My interest is, if I propose to this man that I need a project to electrify Shangombo, to electrify Chifubu in Indola, what project have I told him for him to have a budget? Now, those of us in diaspora and are in knowledge of such things should be ashamed of ourselves that maybe we haven't contributed enough to make somebody make a decision. Now, these people rely on the knowledge they have to make a decision. And when they make a decision, we all come up and, you know, we all rise in arms and say, oh, he made a decision. Why did he put 2%? Who is he? What profession is that man? Do you expect him to understand agriculture? To understand my biotechnology issues. So anyway, in a nutshell, those of us in the diaspora should be very, very specific and not be trivial.
Okay.
Let's
specific. Dr. Mitty, your proposal, specific proposal now, because some of the projects are talking
very specific. Do you want me to tell them, we don't have time.
Okay, well, this is where I'm going. Some of the projects you are talking about are $1 million projects. And diaspora can deliver. Whether you are working in McDonald's or you are a chief accountant here or a doctor.
The embarrassing part, can I say something about that? The embarrassing part is 90%, I don't know how much budget of Zambia is actually based on donor funding. So, oh, you're
saying 90%.
Is,
no, it's not. It's not
90%. So I don't know how many. It's
supposed to be donor should be like 40% or so.
Okay, right. Okay. Now, can you imagine if 40% of donor funding can be directed project, pioneered by the diaspora, saying in Zambia to invest, we need to have a food mango processing factory in Indola, you know, where I was born. And those are my dreams.
No, in Kichwe.
That money, instead of giving
it to the government. You in dollar.
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
You put a processing place where you don't have
anybody there for them.
Leave Mr. Mitty alone. Someone has caught on it.
Where are you?
On what projects we should do.
Someone has just called him. Someone has just called in from on Skype. Good morning. Me, I'm still in good morning era.
No, in UK, it's afternoon, big time.
Okay.
Good morning, sir. I'm in Minnesota. I'm on Skype.
Oh, you are on Skype. Yeah, we can't hear you. We can't hear you that good. What's your name, sir?
My name is Munyimba. Just listening.
Okay, Mr. Munyimba, thank you so much. Another one I just called in on Skype. Good morning.
I must be the only one.
Okay. There are a lot of... Mr. Mwata, the project Mr. Mitty wants us to do $1 million worth of a project, and we have potential to deliver. Where do we go from here?
We go to the Zambia Investment Institute. There is an office in Zambia that looks at that, and it can provide guidance as to...
but we only have potential. We don't even have that check, 1 million. We need to collect the 1 million first, or find a way of collecting the 1 million, and
Roger.
Then.
Roger.
I think about Vamiti knows where we can go to get the money. First, present the business plan, and then approach those institutions that you were referring to. So that they can pledge a $1 million check, and then we take the next steps.
Thank you so much. I'll be waiting to hear from everyone next week as we close our e-conference. Tasaya, do you have, Musaba, you have any last words?
Yeah. So next week, again, I can encourage everybody to go and join the groups, the skills and identity section, and also the doing business in Zambia. You go to Zambia Connect to join up. And interestingly, what's being said today or discussed in this forum will go to feedback into our email discussions next week. And next week, we're looking at the possible solutions, how the diaspora can be a part of the solution, and how really we can make this movement be viable and our country moving forward.
Thank you very much. Mr. Miti, please come in.
Yeah.
Mwata, Cletus, the others on Skype I couldn't follow. My friend Patrick Musava, it's been nice having you. Until next week, this is Zambia Block Talk Radio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.